This week on New World Notes, we're having a rerun of a show originally broadcast in June 2010. It's a two-part interview with political scientist Michael Parenti. Please stay tuned for part two. Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. Today we'll have the second and final part of a dialogue with activist and political scientist Michael Parenti about his new book, God and His Demons. I hope you'll stay tuned. For decades, Michael Parenti has been among the most engaging voices on the left. Many of his public lectures are preserved on the internet. He's the author of some 22 books, including History as Mystery, The Assassination of Julius Caesar, Contrary Notions, and his latest, God and His Demons, just published by Prometheus Books. For more information on Michael's lectures, books, and articles, check out his website, www.michaelparenti.org. The new book, God and His Demons, is a very readable survey of the cockamamie conception of God found in the Bible, of the political abuses of religion, and of the hypocritical, destructive, and let's not forget larcenous behavior done in the name of religion by those who present themselves as pious. It's also a compelling argument for the separation of church and state. In the first part of our conversation, Michael spoke at length about the plague of child sexual abuse by the Christian clergy. Surprisingly, to me, it turns out that the Protestant clergy are as guilty as the Catholic. Bad as these crimes are, even more dismaying is the cover-up of them by church authorities. And now, at the Vatican, we're seeing the cover-up of the cover-up. Moving on to the Buddhists, Michael gives a seldom-seen view of Tibet when it was a theocracy, before the Chinese communists came in and took control. Tibet was no Shangri-La back then, but in fact a very repressive feudal society, which made life miserable for the great majority of the Tibetan people. Parenti has no love for the Chinese communists, but he does conclude that the Tibetans are less oppressed now than they were under the old feudal system. We talked about the sin of usury, the sin of charging high interest rates on loans. The Bible does not mention either abortion or gay marriage, but it denounces the sin of usury repeatedly. Think of this the next time you're paying your credit card bill while Jerry Falwell is denouncing gay marriage. We ended the first installment talking about creationism, intelligent design, and the theory of evolution. If you missed it and want to catch it, you'll find a link on the show's website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. In today's installment, Michael discusses how three powerful institutions interact. These are the state, the church, and economic power. And when they do interact, it's seldom good news for the citizens. We'll hear how the Christian right has already conquered the Air Force Academy and is making big inroads into the rest of the military. We'll hear about FEMA's very scary plan to use the clergy to suppress rebellion if and when martial law is imposed. And we'll hear Michael explain why, despite everything, he's not an atheist. Let's return to the conversation about God and His Demons held by us, separated only by the North American continent, on April 6.
Your book, God and His Demons, just out, is very, very readable, and you don't have to be a scholar, you don't have to be a professor, you certainly don't have to be a political scientist or a theologian to think it a really good and informative read.
Great, and thank you.
One of the reasons for that is that the radical political analysis is of rather lower proportion than one might expect from you, say, if one was used to the lectures you give.
Mm-hmm.
There's a question in my mind. I'd just like to feel you out on this and see what your thoughts are. It strikes me, especially after reading your book, that you know there are three very, very powerful institutions that are affecting our lives. One is the nation state, one is the church, and one is the powerful economic interests.
Mm-hmm.
I think the two of us agree on the relationship of the state and the powerful economic interests, that they're both very powerful and they both have their own agendas, but the state serves the economic interests more than vice versa.
Correct.
How does the church fit in?
Well, the churches, many of them, especially the right wing, the Protestant right wing fundamentalist churches, and also the Catholic Church in various countries, it varies from place to place. Of course, in Latin America, the Catholic Church actually developed a liberation theology, and that was smashed by Pope John Paul II. But the church is very much wedded to both the state when it can make inroads, when it's got a right-wing reactionary leadership, as George Bush for 8 years. The religionists got enormous amounts of support from the state, while at the same time preaching the message of the state, which is the blessings of private property and free market ideology, and equating those things with the virtuous society. And the church was also very, very wedded to corporations. They get money from big corporations in many cases, many of their ventures. They themselves become big corporations. A lot of these mega churches, the non-denominational churches, are incorporated. They have boards of trustees and people from the business community because they've become multi-million dollar money-making things. And the reason they've gotten so big is because they reach vast audiences. And they reach vast audiences because they have access to such amount of wealth and media. They buy up the radio stations. They buy up they've got a TV network, the Christian Broadcasting Corporation, CBC. Now, liberal and progressive Christianists and religionists and such, they don't have that kind of money. They don't get that kind of money. So they've got, you know, they got their church basement where they can get together and they can talk about the mission they're going to have in Guatemala and try to help people in a little village. And they make complaints about how poorly ordinary people are treated in various countries, including our own. The Jim Wallace kind of liberal Christianity.
The Catholic Worker, the American Friends Service Committee.
Right, and, the Catholic Worker.
Whom you never hear about in the media.
Protestant, Catholic, and even Jewish.
And Rabbi Lerner.
Yeah, Rabbi Michael Lerner. Yeah, we don't, those guys are not as likely to get as much, although Michael has gotten more than the average rabbi, I would say, in terms of publicity.
But less than Pastor Tilton.
Yes, indeed. So religion has served and is a theocratic force. It's used by reactionaries to take over portions of the state. I talk about the infiltration into the armed forces. And
yes, that's a scary chapter.
Yeah, and into the whole Air Force Academy. I spoke at the Air Force Academy many, many years ago, and it was nothing like what it is today. I mean, I could never get within a half a mile of the Air Force Academy now, but the Protestant fundamentalist groups have, in effect, taken it over.
Yes.
So it does become very worrisome, indeed.
In the same chapter you talk about the Air Force Academy, you talk about the FEMA training clergy response teams. Can you tell us about that? That sounds way, way on the fringes.
Yeah, very strange, too, because it seems at variance with the conservative orthodoxy. The conservative ideological orthodoxy is that government won't solve your problems. Don't go to government. Government is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, they're sort of skitzy about the question of government. Government is an evil, and it's the problem when you're talking about feeding people, helping the elderly, organizing health care, human services. They don't want government. But government is something to be obeyed and respected and worshipped almost when it involves police, the military, and obedience to the powers that be. And these FEMA clergy response teams, you could even hear some of their sermons on YouTube. I don't know if they've taken it off now, but I did cite one or two. It was riveting. It was fascinating to hear this minister saying to his congregation, there's too much emphasis on rights. What you have to learn to do is obey. And they always, their favorite passage in the Bible is Romans 13, of course, where Paul makes that famous statement about God is the source of all terrestrial authority. So all authority you must accept and obey as coming from God, including the emperor, you know, that same emperor who burned Paul at the stake or something. We think, we don't know for sure what happened to him.
But if I understand what you said, these teams are being put together in order to pacify the population and stop them from rebelling if there's a massive revocation of civil liberties and government roundups? And
that's correct. They anticipate real apocalyptic breaks in society.
The government anticipates this.
The government, there are people
in the
government.
And is enlisting the clergy
right.
to help them put it down.
Right. You've had people in the military, in the Pentagon, say that there are going to be major resource wars. You know, there are going to be wars over water supply. There are going to be wars over this or that. And instead of thinking about how can we prevent such wars and how can we treat the environment in a better way, they just think, well, we got to win those wars. That's what we got to do. We have to kill a lot of other people. And we also have to make sure that the population doesn't start trying to take their own survival in their own hands, and they better do what the Homeland Security and the FEMA people and the Pentagon and the Marines and everybody else says. And so we enlist clergy to teach these people to obey.
Obey edicts such as mandatory vaccination, gun confiscation,
yeah,
what
else? It's hard to imagine. In certain parts of this country, it's hard to imagine any reactionary right-wing government force that can take away the guns of the reactionary right-wing non-governmental yahoos out there. It does show, though, it does really show that the fringe has really gotten lively, and the fringe is developing a certain kind of momentum and audacity.
How about one more question?
Yeah, sure.
But yet, you know, despite all that you've observed and all that you've researched and all the cogitation you've put into all of this and producing this marvelous 250-page book, God and His Demons.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not an atheist, despite
well,
everything.
I just don't know what atheist. You see, it's like with Clarence Darrow. He said, I don't believe in God because I don't believe in the tooth fairy. And I thought that was a very frivolous, sort of devaluing kind of statement. The more I thought about it, there's something profound about that. An atheist is someone who takes the God stuff too seriously. Mm-hmm. And I so don't accept this God of the Bible that I can't reject him. Rejecting him means taking him seriously.
Mm-hmm. You don't take the the God as he's depicted in the book of Genesis
right.
as something that's worth decades and decades of your time trying to refute.
Right, although I did make an effort to refute because it was so fascinating and
mm-hmm.
so horrifying and so edifying. I guess I'm agnostic also is something I feel uncomfortable with because that still gives credence. I would argue in the opening pages I talk about Hegel and the Zeitgeist. On the other hand, atheists are themselves not very helpful or interesting when you say, right. What is this cosmic thing, this incredible wonderment and thing? What is it? Where does it come from? Where is it going? Or it hasn't come from any place. We don't know. And an honest atheist has to say, I have no idea. There's no way I can even get my mind around this, you know. The less honest atheist says, our level of scientific development hasn't reached the stage where we can answer all those questions, but we will. Well, that's a form of religion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, that's a religion. When you think that you have a method, this puny little scientific method that got a rocket ship finally to the moon, and you think that you can get your mind wrapped around this whole universe and what it is. So I just think the categories don't answer to the wonderment and puzzlement of the whole thing. That's all. I'm going to have to make up another category, like a non-theist or something.
Will you do the end?
I'm a cosmic non-theist, of which there are some. There are people who very consciously see God as this cosmic, undifferentiated, impersonal, but wondrous cosmic force of which we are all a part. Now, why some of them feel compelled to have to call that God, I don't know why they got to give that the name God, but some of them do, you know, and they make a big deal out of, that's my God. I even have that quote by Albert Einstein right on page one of the book, I think, where he says, God is the stuff after you've done all your theories and formulas and all that, and you sit there and you're still caught in the wonder and mystification of this enormous thing that that defies any kind of explanation from our puny brains, you know. Einstein talking about his puny brain. but he is, yeah. He's saying even the greatest geniuses among us can't come up with grasping this thing.
And you end the book, the book has a plentiful lack of heroes, but you end the book with two people who are praised very highly, and that is Giordano Bruno and Montaigne, both Catholics from the
Montaigne,
16th century.
Montaigne, Michel de Montaigne. Montaigne's essays are very famous. They're considered a classic and all that.
Mm-hmm.
They're rather dull essays. They're rather thin, I thought. They do display an awful amount of classical learning. You know, he is seeped in Greek and Latin classics. But what Montaigne did have in some of his essays, it was startling because he was a right winger. I mean, he was a monarchist, conservative Catholic, but his view was, I'm not going to lord over others. There's room. I'm not a template for other people. I'm not one of those who's going to strive for a society where we all have to be cut from the same stamp. People have wide diversities. There are many, many roads to God, and God is there, you know, whatever. And then Giordano Bruno was marvelous. I dedicated the book to him. He lived 1548, I think, to 1600. And Bruno had views that were, well, he didn't think Jesus was God. He didn't think Mary was a virgin and all that stuff. He put that aside. But he also believed that in a heliocentric system, that the planets went around the sun, he believed that the whole universe was filled with billions of heliocentric systems. In other words, that stars were suns, and the sun was a star, which was rather remarkable for that time. And he also believed that the universe was beyond any comprehension in terms of its scope. Human, no way we can comprehend it. And he, for a while there, we had scientists talking about how we may be reaching the outer boundaries of the universe. And now they've changed that view. I don't know if you know, they say, oh, God, no, there's more way beyond all that. There's just the vastness. We've come nowhere near the outer ranges, and we don't even know where that is. And that was Bruno's position in 1565 or so, 1580 maybe, where he said, There's no way you can even begin to imagine what this whole thing is. So that's where I am. But I tell you, if I leave the reader up a tree, it's a lot of fun getting there. And there was certainly a lot of
it
stuff.
Is, and there's a lot of fun in the book, and a lot of that wonderful Parenti humor, that comic irony that comes out here and there and everywhere, including and especially in the epigraphs. I especially like the epigraph to Chapter 2 by J.R. Ackerley.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I am halfway through Genesis and quite appalled by the disgraceful behavior of all the characters involved, including God.
Right.
That's a wonderful quote.
I have these head quotes on each chapter.
Yes.
I like the one by Mark Twain, too, which says, It's not the parts of the Bible I don't understand that bother me. It's the parts I do understand.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that. And Bertrand Russell says, don't criticize religion because religion makes men good. I haven't noticed that. So there we are. There we have it. And I think what people should do, and this is true even of a religionist, if you really want your religion, then you should support the separation of church and state. And you should support that. De Tocqueville, I think I'm one of the few people on this issue who bring De Tocqueville up because he had some remarkable observations to make about America in the 1830s. He said, I was struck by the vigorous life of religion in America. The churches all over the place. And when I talk to people, they would always say, our religions and our churches are so vigorous and vibrant because we keep the damn government out of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep government and church separate from each other. So back then, contrary to what they are now, they were separatists on church and state. They believed there should be a wall. And I would say to anybody who has any kind of spiritual view that your greatest enemy is the theocracy, that is those who would use the power of the state to impose this religion or that religion. And it's a very pernicious thing because, you know, once you say, my faith is the one true faith, and if it is, then why should I tolerate other faiths which are false? But there's an arrogance there. How do you know? I mean, how do you... The subjects we're dealing with here are so, as I say, so beyond our reach. Why don't you leave it open? And if that's what you want to embrace with your whole heart, if you want to worship the purple peacock, as some people in Kurdistan do and such, then worship that or worship this or worship whomever you want to worship, but allow other people to believe or disbelieve whatever they choose to do. And that's the message of the book. It's a very humane and modest message, I think.
Michael Parenti, thank you for a fascinating conversation and a fascinating book, God and His Demons.
Thanks a lot, Kent.
Jerry Falwell's God was standing by the elevator while we were talking about the party, so we had to invite him. Secretly, we were all wishing that he wouldn't come because he's vengeful and jealous and he tends to smite people. And of course, he knew we were thinking that. So it made him all the more determined to show up and punish us. And I wanted to invite my God, but I couldn't find him. But Jerry Falwell's God is hard to miss. Gossamer robe and the beard down to here and the button that says, "What would Jesus do?" And sure enough, you know, day of the party, there he was at the door. And he spoke, spaketh he, saying, "I am come." And I knew there was a joke there. But Jerry Falwell's God will not be mocked. So I said, "Come in." Jerry Falwell's God. Jerry Falwell's God. Now, I'm no heavenly host, but I throw a decent party. And there were people of all kinds there. Black, white, Swedish, Norwegian, the whole human spectrum, and right away, Jerry Falwell's God found the two people who would listen to him and began speaking in a voice so loud it made the Beastie Boys sound like the Vienna Boys Choir. And he made the lame to walk. And these were my friends, so they were still lame, but they could walk. And he turned the loaves to fishes and the Oreos to Hydrox. Subtle, I thought. And he divided up the room, divided he, saying, "Gays here, lesbians here, pagans here, abortionists, feminists, civil libertarians, people for the American way," and frankly, some of us did not know where to stand. I went with the lesbians. Jerry Falwell's God. Jerry Falwell's God. And he pointed his huge finger at each group in turn, saying, "I blame you and you and you who have secularized society and cast me out of the town square." And I thought, man, you are the town square. He said, "Lo, I have lifted the veil of protection, for the end days are here and the judgment is nigh, where I will draw the faithful to heaven and leave the unrepentant to walk a desolate earth." And I thought, more polyester for the rest of us. And he spat fire and he rained toads and he brought forth seven plagues of seven bowls. And finally I just said, "Look, I'll tell you one thing Jesus would not do. Jesus would not wreck a guy's party." And Jesus would not preach hate. And Jesus would not stand in the rubble and say, "I told you so." And Jesus would not use an international catastrophe to score points for some misogynistic, narrow, homophobic, anti-Semitic interpretation of his life and teaching. And if people are jealous and judgmental and vengeful and violent, maybe it's because you made them in your image. And if people have cast you out of the town square, maybe it's because you are a finger-pointing, moralizing, rageaholic stone drag who gives deities a bad name. And if people have turned away from your word, maybe it's because you have spinach in your teeth. And he smote me. Jerry Falwell's gone. Jerry Falwell's gone.
That was American theologian Roy Zimmerman nicely summarizing the two chapters of Parenti's book devoted, you should pardon the verb, devoted to the characterization of Jehovah in the Old Testament. These two chapters really brought back memories of my thoughts and feelings as a young child in Sunday school at a mainstream Protestant church. Like Zimmerman, J.R. Ackerley, and Parenti, I was appalled at the behavior of this omnipotent psychopath who did not seem to possess a single human virtue. The story of how God commanded Abraham to slit the throat of his son, just as a test of faith, did not sit at all well with this 6-year-old boy. The tormenting of Job? And they didn't even tell us about most of the mass slaughters and genocides God was always ordering the Israelites to perform. Not to mention drowning everybody, which they did tell us about. There's more and there's worse, and if you've forgotten or never heard of some of these outrages, chapters 2 and 3 of Parenti's book will refresh your memory. As I said, at age 6 I was appalled. And yet, as Parenti notes, not even Einstein could imagine that the universe could lack some kind of divine or quasi-divine force beyond humans' poor powers to add or detract. Thanks for listening. New World Notes comes to you, truth be told, from the East of the River Satellite Studio and Skunk Works of WWUH-FM, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. Ask for Michael Parenti's God and His Demons from Prometheus Books at your friendly neighborhood bookstore and public library. NewWorldNotes.blogspot.com www.michaelparenti.org. Illegitimae non carborundum, and as somebody once said in an old book I once read, go and sin no more. Ciao.
Don't let them hand you that old jive about survival of the fittest. That notion don't pass the test. 'Cause look at me, I'm still alive. God made the world just like it is. He made the fossils just to tease us. Old bones to test our faith in Jesus. Yeah, this'll all be on the quiz. Creation science. What else?